Why do they call you Crispy?
So back in 2007, I got blown up in Iraq, and I sustained 75% burns to the body, third and fourth degree burns, and then I ended up having my right foot amputated below the knee. And it was kind of interesting, man. I had a buddy of mine, and so let me back up a little bit. I get wounded, I go to the hospital, I recover, wake up, and then the military, we have what it's called a welcome back ceremony. Everybody from deployment that's coming back, mm-hmm. we have this big ball. Everybody goes, everybody from chain of command shows up, and it was a big reunion. I was able to come back to Germany to meet my guys that I had served with and, you know, catch up. Our unit was pretty hard hit with IEDs and stuff like that. We lost about 37 people, and I mean, almost like 75% of the whole company had Purple Hearts, Silver Stars, all that. A buddy of mine that I went to basic training with, his name's Kashmir Werda. He gets blown up. nothing happens to his body. Thank mm-hmm. God. Like, nothing happened. But a small piece of shrapnel went in from one side of his eye, out the other, completely blind. Oh. And so we're doing this welcome back ceremony thing. And I'm on one side of the barracks. He's on the other side. You know, he's hanging out with his dad. He's got his cane and stuff. And I see him, and I'm like, oh, snap, it's my boy. Like, we went together to basic training. Mm-hmm. We ended up together in the same unit and everything. So I quickly go on my way. I make my dad like, hey, push me this way. I'm still in a wheelchair. And so I pull up to him, and I'm like, what's up, Werda? And he's like, Omar. You know, we start talking, and I was like, yeah, man. And I got pretty badly burned or whatever. He's like, yeah, dude, I heard before I got wounded. And he's like, but you ain't burned. You're crispy. And dude, from there, I was like, yo, I freaking love that. And just kind of adopted it just for the simple fact of the dark humor in the military. Yeah. But not only that, like, I wanted to own this, these injuries. I wanted to own it. I didn't want them to own me because, you know, as we have a lot of friends and, you know, we've seen all the stories of other veterans who suffer, you know, after the war and go through a bunch of traumatic stuff, and they let their injuries or their experiences consume them. And then that's it. You know, I mean, after that, you know, it's kind of hard coming back from it. So right off the get go, I was like, you know what? They're not going to consume me. I'm going to take over this and own it. And back since 2000, almost the end of 2007 is mm-hmm. when I took up that nickname, and I've had it ever since.
So you said your unit, like, you guys had to deal with IEDs a lot.
Yeah.
What was it about your unit that was the case? Was it just kind of just is what it was, or was there a particular reason why?
No. So this was during the surge. This is 2007, 2000 or 2006, 2008 deployment. And at this point, the Iraqis and Afghanis quickly realized that they couldn't fight us head to head. You know, when mm-hmm. we first got there, we were better trained, we were better armed, we maneuvered better. I mean, everything about it, our training was way better than theirs.
Yeah.
And for the first 6 months, I mean, we whooped them. I mean, just whooped their asses. And they quickly realized, like, if we are going to beat these guys, we got to come up with something different. So this is when you're starting to have militia members from Syria and from all surrounding areas. And, you know, the Syrians are like, well, these improvised explosive devices that we've kind of adopted and used in our wars before, which is the IED, has worked tremendously. You don't have to face your enemy, us, on, you know, freaking small arm combat. You don't have to, you know, fight in the streets and be killed and you lose more people. This is something that you can do a command detonate, or you can use a cell phone from afar, watch when they're going, and detonate the IED. So it was during that time. It was during that surge. And the area that I was in, it was the last place Saddam Hussein had been seen before he went into hiding. So we took over his little town and kind of fought off a bunch of, you know, his relatives and stuff like that. And that place hadn't been patrolled in more than, I don't know, probably 7-8 months. So this whole time they had, you know, the opportunity to reinforce their militia groups. They had more time to plant IEDs all over the place. They really, you know, they started making sniper nests and stuff like that. And then that was kind of what happened. They had the advantage on us when we first came in there, and they were able to, you know, have a slight advantage on us right off the get-go. But then after that, you know, we kind of started, you know, I mean, as anything, you know, you adjust and overcome, and that's kind of what we were doing in between all that. But, I mean, sometimes you can't even spot these IEDs, man. They're just, they're so hard to find and to realize where they're at. And, you know, you'll end up running over one. And then when it goes off, that's when you know that there was one right there.
So psychologically, how did you manage that? Because I know me personally, if I know every time I go out, chances are I'm going pretty high that you're going to encounter an IED. So psychologically, explain to me how, just out of curiosity for me, what was your psychology?
Man, honestly, you really don't think about it because it's just one of those things. It's not if, it's when. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of got to go out and just do your job and hope that you don't hit one that day. Yeah. Because, I mean, every time, if you go out and you're in fear, I think you're not only putting yourself at risk, you're putting your partner's life at jeopardy as well, being scared and all that. And it's not saying that we weren't scared. It's just that we came to terms with it. And it's like, you know, if it happens, it happens. And, you know, when it does, we'll try to, you know, assess, you know, just kind of figure it out all and assess the situation and then go from there. But, you know, you just couldn't roll out and be scared all the time. It's just, it's going to happen or not.
Yeah. And so I'm assuming at a certain point, you know, you almost, your body just kind of reaches a certain steady level. Like it just, you just kind of get used to it.
Right? Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's honestly, it's like getting your car in the mornings, right? You're going to go to work, you're going to go get your coffee, and you already know there's always accidents downtown.
Damn. You know, that's a good way to put it. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, you know that one day it's going to be your turn. You just don't know when.
So you're just like, you just hope it's not that bad.
Yeah. Pretty much like that.
Gotcha. So from a weapon standpoint, what were you running back then?
So I did a little bit of everything. I was a team leader. Sometimes I ran the machine guns on most of the Humvees. That was kind of my primary thing. It was heavy machine guns. So anything from a SAW to a 240, to a 50 cal, to a Mark 19. Mark 19 is a Belfed grenade launcher. To anything else. Sometimes I would be the gunner inside of Bradley, and I had a 25 mic and a coax, which is a smaller version of a 240 Bravo. So okay. It depends. You know, it was honestly, it was depending on what we did. If I was on the vehicle, for the most part, I always went with the 50. And I was on the ground, you know, I typically run around with an M4 or maybe a SAW sometimes would give some of the other guys a break. Gotcha. And I was like, give me your, you know, your weapon system here. Take my M4. And I got this one.
What did you have a preference? If you had your choice, what was it?
240.
240. Why?
240 all day. Dude, I love that weapon system. It's very reliable. You know, you can tear it up and you can put that thing to the test and it's going to go. It was a system that never failed me. It was always consistent. Keeping the zero on it was perfect. Mm-hmm. Where with the 50 cal, if your head timing spacing was off, the whole gun's off. And then you're in the middle of a firefight, you're shooting one round and try to load another one. And you don't have time for that sometimes.
Yeah.
And then the 249, I really enjoyed it, but I felt like it was more of a close quarter combat type of gun. To where the 240, you could be close or far or anything. Oh, it's a 308. It's gonna just tear it up. So that's what I like carrying.
Yeah, you like the heavy stuff.
Oh yeah, man. I'm a big boy, man. I'm a big boy. they ain't call me Juggernaut for nothing. So
so before that, before you got into military, were you into guns at all? Was that part of your lifestyle, or was it just?
Not really, to be honest with you. You know, my father was in, he was a tanker during the first Gulf War. So he held a couple different jobs. So us growing up and He had a friend, a close friend, who used to work at the landfill in town. And this is before we had shooting ranges available to us. So we used to go there, and my dad had this little 38 revolver pistol that, you know, he used to teach my brother and I how to shoot. And that was it. But I mostly grew up with shotguns, you know, because we had a I'm from a small town in South Texas called Brownsville.
Yeah.
It's right next to South Padre. And down there, duck hunting and dove hunting is huge. And, like, especially amongst the Hispanic community down there, because it's a cheap thing to do. You know, you don't have to go pay so much money to go on a deer lease and all. Yeah, I mean, you know the deal. Yep. So it was relatively cheap. All you needed to do was know somebody that had a little bit of land. You know, you go sit up under a tree and have fun.
Yeah.
So that was those were the only things that I was familiar with at the time. So joining the military was kind of where it took off. And, you know, they hand you the handbooks and you start, you know, reading it. And basic training, I mean, if you're doing something and if you're not doing anything, you have a lot of downtime and you get bored very easily. And I'm one of those that if I look at a pen, I'm start thinking, what's the mechanics behind this? How do I take it apart? Can I put it back together? Mm. So I will sit there and start reading the hand manuals on some of the stuff. And guys are like, what are you doing? I'm like, just learning about the weapon system. They're like, what do you need to learn? It shoots. And they go. And I'm like, well, you know, it's got a firing pin. It's got a retention pin. It's got this. It's got that. Like,
yeah.
You know, and it just kind of caught my attention. So I read a lot of the manuals and I started learning more and more about it. And what was pretty cool was I was able to modify to an extent my weapon systems when I was going down range. So I was able to get, you know, my own red dots, you know, muzzle brakes, if I wanted to put on a suppressor, things like that. So I started slowly modifying my AR to the way that I wanted. So I would change out the trigger. I mean, we had a mil-spec trigger, godly. And in the military, like,
yeah,
it's probably like a 30-pound trigger. So, you know, I would order things like that. And I don't think the weapons guys really noticed because, you know, I take that out and put a drop-in trigger and change it and do all these things. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what got me into it is it was just being in the military you know, just learning every single weapon system that we had. And then that caught my attention on, well, there's other manufacturers. Like, what are they doing? Like, that's different from this person. And, you know, that was just kind of how I got into it. And, you know, after being injured, I wanted to have something outside of the hospital that I could do that I was going to enjoy. And that was going to the range. And it became therapy because, as you know, my hands are pretty jacked up.
Yeah.
So I would do things that I couldn't do. So like it took me a while to learn how to tie my shoelaces. It took me a while, you know, how to do buttons, things like that, or zipper or whatever. And you know, I was like, I need to learn how to shoot again. So I went to the range. My hands were a little different at the time. I couldn't reach the trigger. You know, with this finger here. I don't know if you can see it, but it's kind of curved.
Yeah.
To where I can pull a trigger now, but before it was straight. And so it was very hard for me to put my finger on the trigger. So I came back and asked the doctors. I was like, I want to fuse this trigger and a trigger finger. And they were like, we can do that. And so they did it. And then once I healed, I went back out and shot again. And then I'm like, cool, well, I like that pistol. I want to try a different one. So that's just kind of the snowball effect, man. They just rolled and, you know, here so we are.
Is your perception on like the trigger pull? Is it the same as it was before? All right, like how has it changed in terms of like do you have a preference now for a different type of trigger because of after your injury or
I like a light trigger. Yes.
Okay.
I do. So typically, you know, and that was another thing when I was in the Army, I went to a school that's called SAM 31, which you pretty much learn every weapon system, how to take it apart, how to put it back together, how to make things full auto from semi-auto. So I noticed that sometimes pulling the trigger was a little too hard on my fingers that, you know, I hadn't built that strength yet. So what I would do is buy triggers, put them in, and then shave those triggers down a little more. I mean, I have a rifle somewhere in the house that's a 16-ounce trigger. Like, you breathe on it and it goes off. and I hunted with that for a long time.
Shut
and
up.
I knew as soon as that safety comes off, then you better watch out. Yeah. So things like that, or like, you know, my ARs and pistols, I shaved down like the AR to like a pound trigger, things like that. And so that kind of, that was my preference at the time. Now I think I've gotten the strength and kind of expected where to go. So sometimes I'll mess with the triggers, sometimes I won't. Okay. But yeah, but I if I could have it my way, I like a light trigger.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been, sometimes I like a light trigger, sometimes I don't. I've had, I call them safe indies. I know the way you like, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I had a few of those when I was first starting to learn how to do it all over again. And I always make sure I was by myself.
I think anybody who's shot a considerable amount of time in their life has had a safe ND. Now, that's a bit of a contradiction, right? Because technically no ND is safe.
Safe.
But, you know, it's that time you're at the range and your gun's already up and you're getting ready to shoot. You just end up shooting a little earlier than you anticipated.
Like that guy with that revolver. Yeah, I meant to do that. Except mine wasn't caught on film, so
exactly.
It never happened.
Oh man, dude, like it's crazy. But you know, so for me, I kind of like that middle ground. Like I like a real smooth, like a clean take up, like almost like a two stage. Not kind, almost like it is a two. That's a two stage.
Yeah,
it's like a quick clean take up, and then like a like little crisp break. So I'm somewhere around like 3.5, 4.
Yeah, that's perfect.
That's kind of like where I like to kind of sit.
Yeah, and that's the cool thing about it now, right? Like as much as we shoot and do gun reviews all day, every day, what I really enjoyed is a lot of the manufacturers have actually listened to the people, and some of these guns roll out now at a 3, maybe 4 pound trigger, opposed to before we were like, what the hell is 8 pounds? Dude, yeah,
like, I remember I was like. Before, when I kind of started getting into the gun stuff, I was like, you know, especially like the double action single stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, this is heavy as shit. Like, and I would kind of lie to myself, like, because I kind of liked the safety aspect of having the heavy first pull. You know, this was at my genesis. So I was still kind of in that weird safety mindset. That was a weird way to say that. But that kind of over eager, like, you know, you want everything to be unbelievably, you want a super heavy trigger pull. You want five safeties on the slide. You know what I mean? And you want a grip safety and you want everything on there to be safety. And there's nothing wrong with that per se.
No.
But, you know, as you become more proficient with the firearm, you want the less things you want to get in your way.
Oh, yeah.
Efficiently.
Yeah.
And you know, and I remember like I actually tried to teach myself how to shoot double action.
Yeah.
And it honestly just got to the point I was like, this is stupid.
I'm with you. Even now, like my staccatos, I pin the little thing in the back. I'm like, I'm not doing this. I'm pinning it. So I'll pin it in.
So I don't pin my grip safeties.
You don't?
No, I like the grip safeties.
I
do all body carry.
Well, I understand on you because your hand goes automatically back there. Mine's a little different. So when I'm pulling, I'm already like I might not be the best grip, but I know if I pull the trigger, it's going to go off, and I don't have to wait for that grip.
But you're not. But even people with normal hands, they don't. I just want to let everybody know, like. Because as we get past the more formal part of the discussion, this is gonna become incredibly insulting. But people who don't know our relationship and how we're like, geez, Collins is an asshole, and I'm like, y'all don't know Crispy.
Whatever, man. Honestly, there's nothing that offends me or anything like.
Yeah.
I truly believe dark humor is the best medicine out there for any type of traumatic thing that you've ever been through. And not only that, man, I feel like if your friends don't bust your balls, then they're not really your friends.
They're friends, you know? Like, I agree.
Like, that's just an acquaintance at that point.
Yeah, because a lot of my friends, I'm like, man, I don't really like you because you're a dick. Like, but I love you because you're an asshole. Like, you know, but it, I mean, either way it works. I know guys that, like I said, with normal hands, mm-hmm. they pin their grip safeties too.
Yeah.
And I get it. I understand why. I think for me, I do a lot of off body carry. So, you know, for me, I like the idea that in order for this gun to go off, you've got to have the grip safety decompressed, the safety's off. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It just kind of minimizes that. But
yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's shooter preference. Honestly, I mean, we're all different. We all don't shoot the same. We all don't have the same grip. We don't have the same stance. I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, what works for you may not work for others and vice versa. But as long as you're proficient in what you do and you're comfortable with it, who cares?
Yeah. So speaking of which, preference-wise, so for like your home defense setup, what's mm-hmm. your go-to home defense gun? Like style, platform, more or less.
Platform, right now, and for the past couple of years, I've been rocking a AR-9.
Really?
I can't even remember the name of the ammunition, but that's kind of what I've liked, to be honest with you. I feel very comfortable with it. And for me, grip is key. And with an AR, it's just I'm very proficient with when it comes to a rifle in my hand, and I feel more comfortable with it. My pistol game is medium. I mean, it's not there, but I know that with that rifle, I have it so dialed in, man, that if you have somebody like this, I can squeeze that through and just make it happen. So that's kind of what I've been running. But I do have strategically placed around the house and some more pistols and stuff. But next to me in my bed, it's an AR-9.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm weird, man, because I can shoot a pistol pretty good. But there's something about a rifle for me.
Yeah.
It's very confidence inspiring. Like I just feel comfortable, comfortable mm-hmm. with it. So for me, and you know, I have a handgun on my nightstand, and then I have a then I have an AR by the bed also on the wall.
Yeah.
And you know, if I have the time, my go to is going to be straight to the rifle. But whereas the gun is set up to be kind of like, oh shit, you know.
Of course, right. So I do have a pistol next to my bed as well. And that's if, you know, whoever decides to invade my house is already in the room, then obviously that's going to be the key thing to go. But
yeah,
if I watch in the cameras and you're coming in, I'm coming out with my rifle. Which is crazy, right? Because, like, dude, I had a buddy of mine who's he was an officer in the military. He was, you know, an infantry guy like me. And he's like, hey, dude, I'm trying to get home defense. Like, what shotgun do you recommend? And I'm like, shotgun? I was like, wait a minute, what is this, the 60s? He goes, well, what do you mean? I'm like, why would you want a shotgun? Yeah. And he's like, I was looking at the shockwave and I went, oh my God. And I was like, you want your wrist to be gone? Like, what is wrong with you? And he goes, well, I don't know. So I kind of walked him through and I was like, look, dude, I was like, either do an AR-9 like I do, or sometimes I alternate with a AR pistol, mm-hmm. And then I'll have a pistol as well. I was like, I feel like this is better off than a shotgun. I'm like,
what is actually? It's funny you say that. I actually just did a video today. I have a friend. She works at. She's a salesperson at a Ferrari dealership out here in Dallas, and she was like, hey, I'm gonna buy a gun for home defense, and I want it to be a shotgun, not. What do you suggest? She's like, I want it to be a shotgun. And like, and I want it to be a Benelli M4.
They're great.
Yeah. And she never actually shot one before. So I was like, all right, cool. This would be a cool little video. So I was like, all right. So she came out, brought my M4 and kind of walked her through it a little bit. She was really comfortable with it. Like my shotguns aren't my go-to for home defense. I mean, I did a whole video on that. But you know, she felt comfortable with it. I gave her pretty much, I started her off with like some like light target loads, ramped it up a little bit and then went full bore and even had her shooting slugs. And she was like, I really like it. Like, and I'm like,
Yeah, but I mean, you set it up with a Benelli M4, like the.
I know, I told, and I told, I told her that. Come on.
Like, yeah, of course. Like, who wouldn't be comfortable with a Benelli M4?
Hey,
I own one. I love the thing, but yeah.
I spoil my friends. I spoil.
Yeah, them. I mean, come on, right? Like, you if you would have given her something else, she'd have been like, "Yeah, let me see your pistol. Let me see your AR. I'm not doing this."
You know, it's funny. I told her that too. I said, "Look, right now you're spoiled. Like, you don't." You don't know any different. Like, you like this. You like this shotgun because it's an exceptional shotgun. You start playing on the shallower end of the pool with respect to shotguns, you're not gonna like them as much.
No,
you know what I mean. Yeah. So just understand that. And she was like, "Yeah, I get it. I totally understand." I'm like, "All right." I was like, "So yeah. So if you buy this Benelli M4, this is gonna be with you for life."
Oh yeah.
You're not gonna like anything else. You're gonna go to something else, and you're like, "Oh, what is this?"
No, yeah. I mean, you can't. You start off here, you can't go down.
Yeah.
But yeah. But I mean, yeah. I mean, like for me, I wouldn't feel comfortable with a shotgun inside the house.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense. I mean, I don't know.
No, I know a lot of people who feel the same way.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather have a small rifle. I can clear better. I can move faster.
Yeah.
Maneuver, doing a lot of CQB before and now. When I still train, like, I'm very proficient with it. And I know how to move, where I need to pie and throughout the house and stuff. So I'm comfortable with that. But if you can do it with a shotgun, go ahead and do it. I mean,
yeah. I mean, now the weird thing is I always feel like I have to have a shotgun. That's the interesting thing about it. Like, I just...
Like by your nightstand?
No, just have one.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah. Like, yeah. And then I make sure that I at least try to, you know, shoot it, like, once, you know, as often as I can.
Yeah.
You know, withstanding. But, yeah. But other than that, I wouldn't call it necessarily my go-to. Now, the weird thing is my Benelli is set up. I'm currently setting it up to be kind of a self-defense shotgun.
No, nice.
For whatever reason, but
yeah,
you know, I love the Benelli M4. Like, I love it.
Yeah.
And so I kind of want to freak it out, but then also make it as functional as possible. Because in the event that maybe I do have to go to it for some reason, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe I just want to start launching slugs at people, not, you know, defensively, not offensively.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's just one of those, dude. They become very addicting. Like, one that I bought that Benelli M4 and fell in love with it. Then, you know, I started doing a lot more bird hunting. So I bought a Benelli Super Black Eagle 3 and then bought an Over and Under. So, like, I literally switch all around. So if I'm going to the range and I'm going to do some, you know, just target shooting or whatever, I'll bring out the M4. If I'm going dove hunting, I'll bring the Over and Under, you know, just more of a classic look. Yeah. And then if I'm going duck hunting, then I'll bring out the, you know, Super Eagle and go with that. So there's so many things. Shotguns are awesome. I love them.
Yeah. No, they really are. I need to go dove hunting. I've actually never been dove hunting. I've never been any type of foul hunting I've had.
Come on. Just say one, dude.
Hey, no, I do need to get on that.
Come on.
That should be interesting. I'm pretty sure I'm going to suck, considering I can't shoot clays to save my life. I really can't.
Fix that. My buddy who I train with for about a year now, he's the three-time back-to-back-to-back world champions, and he will correct everything that you're doing wrong because he's done it for me. Yo, yeah. Okay. He's awesome. He's a great coach, though.
You know what we should probably do? We should do a video. We should have, like, is he in Texas? He's local?
Yeah. He's about 30 minutes from me.
Oh, really? Yeah, we should find a place. We should find a spot. And then
I have a private range.
There we go.
we have a private place where we go. So
that's how you got a new truck.
I saw your Ram.
Yeah.
I was kind of jelly. I've been eyeing them for a while. But I don't know if I can let go of my 250.
Oh, here you go. That's diesel, right?
Yep.
I don't know nothing about that.
I
honestly, in a million years, I never thought I'd own a pickup.
Really?
I never even liked SUVs. The only SUV I ever liked, I've had two SUVs in my entire life. I had the Range Rover and I had the G-Wagon. That's it. And I will not touch a Range Rover ever again. And the G-Wagon is the only one there's some other ones out there. You know, I'm a little bougie when it comes
to cars.
But
The Urus is pretty nice.
That's why I stopped short of saying I wouldn't touch another SUV. Because I mean, the Urus is kind of nice.
I drove one. A buddy of mine let me borrow his because I was kind of debating of getting my wife one. And then she's like, you're nuts. I'm not driving that. And I'm like, okay. But I drove it. I'm like, damn. I was hoping she said yes so that I can drive it. But she said no. So here we are.
Yeah, no, man. I've driven one once. And I was like, okay, I can get behind this.
They're nice, dude. They're great. Yeah,
they really are. They really are. But
are you liking the truck though?
Dude, I'm obsessed.
Dude, you got a lot of room.
Dude, it's
you got horsepower.
Horsepower for days.
And you can put stuff in the back.
No, I'm in love. The only thing that sucks. Because I'm so dead set on living in the city because I'm a city rat.
Mm-hmm.
My parking situation is jacked.
Oh, because it's a little too big.
I have to, like, every time I park in my garage, it's an exercise in Tetris. It's like I'm playing Tetris. That's all I'm doing. And it's like, but I love the truck so much, it's worth it to me.
Yeah.
So I have to come up with a system and figure it out. But for the most
I will tell you this, the more that you drive in, the more that you park it, and the more proficient you come with it, dude, when you jump in another car and you park, you're gonna be like, you're like, yep, oh yeah, I got pro. Yeah,
that is true.
That's the benefit of driving a truck. It'll show you how to park really quick, especially really in those tight spaces.
Yep. But yeah, no, man, the thing is, I was driving to the range today, and the tire range that I shoot at?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a large patch of road that to get there that's like really bad. Like it's just potholes, dips and rises. It's nuts.
Yeah.
And for the first time, I was like, even for my G-Wagon, like it can do it fine, but it's kind of annoying. I was like, ooh. Just because today was my first time ever taking it out there.
I was just eating those potholes.
I put it in Baja mode and I was just like,
dude, those TRXs are.
Yeah, they're wonderful, man. They are. And then I figured out the cheat code to the gas mileage too.
Oh yeah,
because the gas mileage is disrespectful. Utterly disrespectful. And what I figured out was put it in snow mode.
Really?
Yeah. Put it in snow mode. It doesn't hold the gears as long. And so you throttle, you lose some of that throttle response. But
yeah,
when you're on a highway and you put it in snow mode, I can average probably 12, 13 miles to the gallon, which is still pretty bad. Yeah, I know. You drive a diesel.
Shut up. Yeah, I was like, I get way more than that in my giant ass truck.
You drive a diesel and you could put a bigger tank in it if you wanted to.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Golly.
No, yeah.
You know what we need to do is I'm going to get you a cover for your truck.
Like I don't want a cover.
You sure?
Wait, what? You mean a tonneau cover?
No,
I put the. I already have one. I put the. What is it? The rack strap. The sliding one. The one that slides.
So the problem with that is you can drop something on it and it's gonna go through, or people can get in it. The one that I have is called Diamondback. I'll send you the link. Mm-hmm. You can drop a bowling ball on your thing and nothing's gonna happen. It's very secure. It covers everything. It's waterproof. Bro, I can't tell you, like, all the stuff that I put back there when it's raining, when we got into the range and things like that, and they're impossible to break into. I mean, I love them things.
Here's the thing, though, because I think I've seen those. They fold up, though, don't they?
Yeah, they opened up.
Yeah, see, I want to be able to, like, stand inside of my bed. And you can't do it with those, can you?
You can stand on top of it.
How? I thought it only folds up like.
Yeah, so
like
it opens up like this, and you can close it.
Yeah, but does it open up not to know a 90-degree angle, or is it
like? No, it opens all the way up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, they open all the way up, and then you can close it. Mm-hmm. I've laid in the back of mine, and because it's a little higher, and I'll lay back there, and I'll start shooting.
Okay. I think my tonneau cover is like, I think maybe it's rated for like maybe 300, 500.
Yeah, you won't be able to. I've put a chair on top of mine, and I brought a tripod and I'll sit there and I'll have buddies drive slow. And then, you know, we see pigs, I just start lighting them up. I'm just saying, Bro, I'm a redneck at heart, bro. I know I'm Mexican, but I'm a redneck at heart.
This truck is going to turn me into a redneck, honestly.
Come on.
Because I'm sitting there driving. I'm driving to the range, and I'm listening to freaking, I don't forget what I was listening to. Some shit I don't normally listen to.
Listen, you're already buying hats. The next thing we got to do is we got to get you a nice pair of starch pants and some boots.
You want me to become a Tejano redneck. That's what you want me to
do. You can wear your black shirts and that's, and keep those, and you'll look just fine. I got you.
We still got to do the hat. Yes, we do.
Can
do that. Yeah, yeah.
We got to go down to San Antonio, man.
Give me a cowboy hat.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a process. You'll love it.
So when did you start getting into like the social media side of things? Because you got a pretty big following.
So surprisingly, I didn't start it for guns.
Uh-huh.
I started right after after I was injured. I started powerlifting, and that was kind of my way in. So it was one of those things like I started, you know, breaking world records in the Paralympics and just like deadlifting big numbers. Like people hadn't really seen somebody with jacked up hands like me, no legs, stuff like that. Deadlifting, you know, 700 pounds, benching 500. And people were just trying to wonder, like, how the hell are you doing that? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just built different, you know? And so that kind of caught the attention of a lot of people within that industry. And I started, you know, coming up around that. And then slowly I just kind of started sharing a little bit more about what I do, the hunting, the guns, the outdoors and all that stuff. And that kind of became a whole mixture of things. And then I let powerlifting go just because my body's pretty jacked up as it is. I mean, there's no reason for me to be deadlifting 700 pounds and benching 500 when, you know, I have pretty bad shoulders and pretty bad hands. Yeah. And I noticed it. You know, I wasn't, you know, I'm no longer a young buck, but I'm 37 and I can feel my body deteriorating. And I'm like, dude, is it really worth it? I was like, I already have the trophies on the wall. What else do I need? You know?
Yeah.
So I slowly gave that up. And I've said it once, man, I've said it a million different times. For me, hunting has been able to provide something that no medication has ever done. You know what I mean? I can't sit here and tell you that, yeah, that I wasn't depressed, that I wasn't in a dark place, that, you know, never, I contemplated suicide a couple of times just because I felt that I was a burden to people, especially my parents. And, you know, like I said before, if you let that brain of yours just wrap around you, you're done. And I noticed that when I went hunting, that stuff was away. All the noise, all the stress, everything of the everyday life just shut off. It was like somebody closed that valve and went.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was able to breathe and relax. And, you know, you really get in touch with yourself and you really learn a lot about yourself when you're in the outdoors, especially when you're hiking and you start thinking like, am I a good person? Am I doing good things? What should I do to, you know, give back and help and things like that? So that's really what did it for me was that. And man, after that, it was just kind of like, cool, this is what I want to do. And I just transitioned into things that I was already doing that I loved. And, you know, for some weird reason, people were like, what do you think about this or this gun? And I'm like, well, I like the components, I like this and I don't like that. And little by little, I was watching people really asking me like, hey, what do you think of this? And I'm like, oh shit, I think this is becoming something. And and then after that, it just kind of took off, you know? And now I try to motivate and make people laugh. Like I try to make funny videos and put them out and just get, you know, people's reactions and kind of give them a little break on social media from an everyday thing where like, you know, if they're down on themselves or they're having a bad day, it's just like, look, we all have bad days. I wake up in pain every single day, but ultimately I choose to be happy, to be alive. Like, I can't complain. I'm blessed. I have amazing friends. I have a beautiful wife. You know, and my family is I love them and they're always been so supportive of everything I do. So like, I have a good fucking life. There's nothing that I can say that is bad. I mean, yeah, I wake up in pain, but who cares? You know what I mean? I've been given a platform by the people to do what I want to do. And if I can keep spreading a positive message, or every time that I jump on my stories and I get to talk about a buddy of mine that I lost overseas, and out of those hundreds of thousands of people that are watching it, one person remembers their name and keeps it alive, that's doesn't get any better than that. Because now I know that my teammate, his name is living on and it's being remembered. And you can't put a price on that. It's just, you know, it's just, I love doing it. And I'm very blessed to do, you know, what we do.
Yeah. And I got to say, like, your energy is infectious. It's infectious, man. It really is, man. And I don't know if you know that or not, but it is. I remember the first time we hung out for an extensive period of time. You know, I can be a little moody sometimes, but man, it was just not
that. Right? Was that the time I put a cricket on you? I think I still have that video somewhere.
Bro. Oh man, I hate creatures, man. I hate them.
Man. I do gotta say, I was kinda happy when I saw you hunting elk in Utah. And I was like watching your stories. I knew exactly where you were at. I was talking to Peter. I was like, you guys are here, here, and here, right? He goes, how do you know? I was like, dude, I'm a hunting fool and I know exactly where you're at. And he goes, yeah. And I was like, yeah. But it was cool to watch you, man. It was awesome to see you kind of break away from being that city rat into the outdoors. And I was just like cheering you on from, I guess, the sidelines. Like, yes, come on, get something on the ground. I'm like, let's go. Because, dude, the feeling that you get from harvesting that animal and put it in your freezer and sharing it with your friends and your family, like, there's no other freaking way to explain it or say, like, how it feels inside. Especially, like, after we had that snowgetting that just happened a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Dude, I had literally just got hunted an elk, and I was blessed to harvest it and have it in our freezer. And so many of our neighbors around our neighborhood were like, we can't get to the store. There's no meat. And, you know, my wife and I were putting, like, 2 or 3 packages of meat. Yeah. And taking it to our neighbors, and they were also very thankful. And I'm like, dude, like, we're blessed. Like, people don't understand, it's not just about killing. People just get in that concept that you're there to kill something. And every time that I've killed something, I've always taken the time to put my hand on the animal and thank them for giving their life to give sustenance for me, my wife, our loved ones, and other people. And it's just a circle of life. It's just how it is. And you know, you can sit here and deny it and say, no, that's murder and all that. It's just a circle of life. This is how it's been since the first day that men were on earth. Yeah. It's always been that way, and it's going to continue to be that way. And I feel like hunting in a modern day now, because we have the technology, but I still feel like we're connected to our ancestors in that same way, because we're trying to put food on the table. And for them, it was, if they didn't put something on the table, they were going to die.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily that with us, because we have all these, you know, like your Uber Eats that you order all the time, and, you know, all your little apps so you get your food to your house. But, you know, it's just I feel connected to Earth and to my ancestors that way, even if it's for a weekend or, you know, a whole week or whatever the case is. But yeah, it resets me, man. It recharges my batteries. And that's honestly, that's why I'm always happy. And when I'm hanging out with you guys and like, dude, life's great, man. You know, it's amazing. It's a blessing. Like, we're breathing air. You woke up today. Like, life's going to be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember, like, even thinking about my elk hunt, I'm like, I get chills a little bit now. You know, in the moment, it sucked.
Yeah.
When I say it sucked, meaning like, because it sucked for me because I wasn't prepared mentally and I wasn't prepared physically for it. And I thought I was, because it's a different type of physicality, and it's a different type of mentality.
Yeah.
You have to embrace the environment entirely. Right. And then there were a lot of moments where I was just like, this is amazing. Like, I'm sleeping, we were waiting because we had stalked this particular elk, and we were too far, but they were in the area like, okay, we think he might come back here later on this evening. So we went and we came back to that same spot, but we had to get there early enough so that it didn't catch wind of us or anything like that. And so I'm like, at one point we're sleeping on the side of a mountain, Like I'm taking a nap on the side of a mountain because I'm waiting for this elk and hopefully see this elk. And I'm like, this is nuts. I mean, for me, it's nuts, right?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just on the side of a mountain and it's like, and I mean, we're freaking up there. And I have a fear of heights, you know, but it was so beautiful and so surreal that my fear of heights was mitigated by just my sensory overload of being in that environment and just how beautiful and just kind of peaceful it was.
Yeah.
You know, and then at the same time, it challenged me because, you know, I'm dealing with the altitude that my body's not used to. And then I'm hiking and I don't hike. I don't walk for fun. So,
we have a lot of hiking places in Texas.
Yeah, right. my idea of hiking is driving. But you know, I'm climbing up these mountains and I'm hiking through and I'm carrying this rifle and I'm like, I'm miserable, but oddly, I'm happy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then it wasn't until it was all said and done. And I got back to the city.
Yeah.
And 2-3 days and I realized, because I remember when I left after I got my kill. Funny thing is, I don't really remember the kill as much as I remember the process to get it.
Yeah.
And then the walk back. I remember the night when I killed it. It was so late in the day. We had to leave it there and come back.
You had to leave it. Yeah.
So we had to hike out.
How did that make you feel? Like when you made that shot, hike out and come back 8 hours later because it's too dark. And if you didn't, how are you going to bump it and you maybe lose it and all these things?
I was running on such an.
Yeah.
That. A lot. Because this was new for me, right? But this is probably intensive hunt for me.
Yeah.
And I remember walking back as we were hiking back in the middle of the night. I'm just replaying it over and over and over and over and over again in my mind. I took my shot from like 450 yards.
Nice. What were you using?
28 Nosler.
Oh, perfect round.
Yeah.
I love that round.
Yeah. And it, you know, that hike back in the middle of the night, there was one moment, and we were walking back and even the guide kind of got like startled a little bit because it's pitch black, dude. And then all of a sudden you just see these two big eyes.
Oh, bear, like, cougar. I mean, yeah.
What the fuck is that? So I'm the only one with like a semi-auto because I have my 10mm Glock on me.
Oh, nice.
Right, on a chest rig, right? And I remember I'm like, and so we all kind of stop and we're waiting. So it's looking at us and we're looking at it. And it's kind of, we're kind of waiting for our eyes to kind of adjust so that we could kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And finally I realized it was just a bull. But at one point I was like, I was about to unsnap and I'm like, I'm getting home. Right.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, nonetheless, it was definitely something I will always remember. And when I got back and I was like, I did it once. I don't think I ever need to do it again.
Oh, you're going to do it again.
And 2 days later, I was like, already thinking, I'm like, okay, I should start working out like this and change this workout so I can be more prepped. And then and now I'm like, yeah, I gotta go back.
Oh, yeah. Have you gotten your meat back?
Yeah. Yes, I did actually. Yeah, I did. Yeah. But I'm still eating my buffalo meat.
Hell yeah. Wait till you cook a little bit of that elk and then it's a weird feeling because it brings you back and everything you just shared with me, like as you're cutting into that steak or that burger, whatever you make with your meat, it just brings you back to that moment where you're like, you know what? I earned this hunt. Like, I hiked it. I did this. Yeah. I was there. I was miserable. Mosquitoes or gnats or all these things that made it miserable. Then when you're eating it, you're like, man, that was so worth it. Like, it's such a crazy feeling, man. But it's like I said, it's what helps you get in touch with yourself and with Earth and, you know, ancestors and all that good stuff. That's what's amazing about hunting, man. Like I always try to explain to people, and I feel like sometimes I'm being like that annoying friend that wants to come and preach to you. You know what I mean? Like, come on, let's say, come on, let's sit down and
don't run away from the Lord.
Like, sometimes I feel like that. Like, I get very passionate about it, man, because it's it's honestly one of those things that I could say that saved my life. Like, it's an experience. It's something that I look forward to all the time now. Like, it's just, it's great. I can't wait to have kids and share that with them and have them, like, take that up as well. If they want to, not something I'm going to push on them, but, like, just share the passion that I have for it with them.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's it, man. We got two things. We got two things on the agenda. One, be you and your guy so he can fix me.
Soon. Oh, too easy.
And then after that, we go foul hunting. I'm game. I'm serious.
Let's go. I got a great place where we can go do dove hunting. They have a great lodge, so you can, you know, stay a little
bit. Yeah. See, I don't do it. Like, all that weird sleeping outside shit.
That's the best part. But anyways, yes, we'll send it out to, we'll have fun.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it. I'm thinking, so what time of the year usually is the best?
So dove is probably going to have to be here next month.
Okay.
But yeah, we'll find a date in between there to go get it done. If not, March is just around the corner and we can take you turkey hunting.
I can't do the turkey hunting here. I have good friends of mine. They have turkey hunting so many times.
Yeah.
And I've been I did my mind. I promise.
That's so fine.
After that, we can do turkey.
All right.
But definitely foul hunting. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Or we can go shoot some duck too. I mean, it's up to you.
I mean, I'm down for whatever.
All right. I'm actually of the month, so I'll shoot you
end
the
of
day
this,
so you
end of this month.
Yeah,
I think I could. Where?
Just down here from where I'm at, just a little further down. It's a little close to San Antonio.
What's that drive? It's a from
for here you, it's probably about 3.5-4.
Okay, I think I can do it because Peter's
or you can fly into San Antonio and I can just go pick you up.
No, I just need a reason to drive my truck.
There you go. You gotta put a little mud in the tires, man. I'm telling you. Just, you gotta put that duck in the back and put a little bit of blood on that bed.
That's what it's Kristen. For. That's what
exactly.
It's for.
That's exactly what it's for.
Yep. So okay. I think I should be able to do that.
Yeah, I'll text you the dates. But yeah,
okay.
That'll be great. I think we'll make a cool video. Bring your videographer. I'll bring mine, and we'll make some cool videos.
I'm game. I'm telling you. All right, brother. I'm about to go order some Uber Eats. We're gonna order Uber Eats, make me an old fashioned, and probably jump on some Call of Duty a little bit here.
There you go.
And then just kind of relax for the rest of the night. Got to have you back on. Got to make you one of my recurring guests.
Come on.
But I appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.